and my fellow Pennsylvanians.
This state's electoral votes are key to who wins the presidency, and both of the candidates know it.
We win Pennsylvania, we win the whole deal. You know that.
White House versus Fed wins.
Just like last time.
But states like Pennsylvania are going to be incredibly important.
The only thing left on the board is Pennsylvania. The president cannot get to the finish line without the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
One state all four candidates are visiting today is Pennsylvania. Its 20 electoral votes are highly coveted, and the Keystone State could end up being one of the determining factors in the race.
Jill's a Philly girl, but I'm a Scranton guy.
Oh, Pennsylvania, we love Pennsylvania.
I'm thrilled to be sitting down today with State Rep Malcolm Kenyatta from Philadelphia. As regular listeners know, Malcolm joined the show in September 2022. Now, that seems like a decade ago with everything that's happened in the political landscape in Philadelphia, in Harrisburg, and also in Washington. But today, we're going to talk pretty granular about his campaign for Auditor General, his work as a surrogate around the country, even, for the Biden-Harris ticket, and much, much more. Malcolm Kenyatta, welcome to my kitchen table.
I'm happy to be with you. Thank you.
Well, I should say welcome back. It seems like a decade ago, but we had a conversation, if memory serves me, in the spring of 2022. You had just finished a historic campaign. Maybe remind listeners a little about that. But even more so, just your journey to public service and to elected office.
Well, remind everybody of my pain now, but yeah, I run for U.S. Senate in a primary against now Senator Fetterman. And, you know, it was an incredible experience and opportunity where I got to tell people and share what I know to be true and what I see all across the Commonwealth, that there are so many working families and working class folks who are having the same struggles and frankly have the same aspirations. And we're told by leaders who want to divide us up that we need to be broken up by region, by race, by religion. And the reality is, if you come from a working class family like mine, really you're just trying to figure out how to make it, how to put yourselves in your family in a position where your kids or the folks you love have it a little bit better than you do, and how to navigate what I call a tenuousness. That's that feeling that so many working families have, where it feels like you're walking across a tightrope. Okay, you're juggling knives and somebody's throwing fireballs at you from under. And at any point, something can knock you off the very precarious economic place that you find yourself. You know, one car repair, one, you know, illness, one unexpected, you know, job loss, or, you know, if you have a small business, loss of a client can upend your entire life. That's what I see all across Pennsylvania. People who are working their butts off and want to see that work rewarded in a way that moves them away from tenuousness to a real spot of security. And that's been, you know, the driving mission of my time in elected office. I always say, you know, my journey to politics is not complex. I was poor and I was pissed off about it. And I wanted to understand how, you know, my mom in particular, because my parents separated when I was young, how she could work all the time. I mean, all the time. And yet still, everything was on a knife's edge constantly. And a part of what I came to understand as I got older is that, you know, the deep poverty that we're experiencing in places like Philadelphia and across the country, the challenges for folks to buy that first home, to, you know, expand their family or start a family, to have that great idea and be able to jump out and actually start that great business. All those things are policy choices. When you look at what happened after the federal government did the child tax credit, the expanded child tax credit, and folks were getting that $300 a month, that reduced child poverty, cut it in half. And so that makes it very clear that there are clear policy interventions that could make a difference in people's lives. And we do them or don't do them based on the courage, the perspective, and frankly, the interest of the elected officials in office. And so instead of constantly begging people to focus on families like mine, to focus on things that I know would have made a difference in my growing up, so we felt more secure and less tenuous, instead of begging people, I decided to freaking run. You know, if we want a government that works for working people, maybe we should just elect some working people.
So tell listeners, we got loads of listeners in Philadelphia as well as Harrisburg, but there's folks from Washington and certainly outside of Pennsylvania. Just remind folks your state house district and talk a little about your neighbors and your constituents.
So I have the best state house district in Pennsylvania, here in the heart of North Philadelphia, parts of Center City, Francisville, and it's a genuine reflection of our city in terms of the economic diversity, in terms of the racial diversity, in terms of the age diversity. I have in my district Temple University and Community College, as well as the school district headquarters. I have in my district 14 senior apartments, senior living, buildings and facility, a half dozen long-term care facilities. And also, as I mentioned, a large population of folks who are in college, young professionals who are out of college and starting their lives or careers if they didn't attend college. And also a real mix of people who are lifelong residents like me and people who have chosen Philadelphia, as their home. And so that mix always gives me a good, I think, pulse of what's happening in other parts of the city because, because we have a little bit of everybody.
So I owe my life literally to Temple University. My parents met there.
Yeah,
although I know for a fact that many of your colleagues listen to this show, so they might contest whether or not you have the best state house district in the Commonwealth. Let's switch and talk a little about politics. I want to take folks a little through your crystal ball of Philadelphia turnout numbers, dynamics at play in the Black community, from the top of the ticket on down. But even before we do that, and this was a big decision for you to run for statewide office for auditor, tell folks a little about that journey. Was it one moment when the light bulb went off? And we should note that the current office holder, a Republican, did make history. He's a Black man as well. And it's always tough going against an incumbent. So share a little of that journey of why you decided to make this run, put on, I'm sure, a lot of road miles.
Absolutely. I will say, Ari, that my parents also met at Temple. So I also owe my life literally to Temple as well as my education.
Go out.
But that's right. For me, what it came down to was how can I continue to do what I'd said a couple of minutes ago, to shift how our government prioritizes, focuses on the working class Pennsylvanians that I don't think always get centered in our politics. I mean, it's not lost on me working in Harrisburg that on many days there are more lobbyists in the building than legislators. And the folks who are there lobbying, not all of them for awful things, but very rarely are there people there lobbying for the families and the neighborhoods that I know all too well. And that to me not only is frustrating, but I have to make sure, and all of us have to make sure, that we channel that frustration, right? Because frustration can do two things. It can just, like, you know, fight, flight, or freeze. A lot of times frustration can make us freeze and just make us say that nothing's going to change. I've had it up to here. And so I'm going to ice out my relationship with politics, keep it out of sight, keep it out of mind. And, you know, don't get my hopes up that things can change or be different, because they're probably not. And so if I lower my expectations to a zero, if I completely unplug from the situation, maybe that's a way that I can sort of emotionally protect myself. I've decided to do a different part of those three things, and to actually, you know, fight, not flee, not freeze, but fight. And a part of that has to be strategic. The presidency is not the only role that matters. The governor's mansion is not the only role that matters. You know, the legislature, incredibly important, but the legislature is not the only role that matters. And, you know, to their credit, I think the Republican Party has done a good job of focusing in on some of the races that I think Democrats too often push aside as, like, not important. And it's a big mistake. And when I look at the tenure of the current Auditor General, I've seen him make policy decisions that have driven home that mistake. You know, first, you know, and this was by happenstance that I happened to be the person to ask them this, but Ari, you will probably remember, and some of your listeners will remember, that Seth Grove, who is now the Appropriations Chair on the Republican side, was previously the Chair of State Government Committee, which I've served on for over a half decade at this point. And during
his time out of state and out of Harrisburg, this is where the rubber hits the road and real questions about election administration and therefore the future of our democracy. Sorry to interject.
No, please do. And then that's exactly right. And you just said exactly what I was going to underscore, that this is the spot where Pennsylvania elections and the rules around elections is where they come. And in response to the lies that were told about the election, you know, Seth was a part of 60 plus Republican colleagues, some former colleagues, who signed a letter that folks might remember asking the House of Representatives to throw out the votes of Pennsylvanians. And I know that a lot of times we just think about Scott Perry and some of these other folks, but no, this was something happening in the legislature. I believe even Brian Cutler, who's the former Speaker of the House, had to testify to Congress and the January 6th committee about Donald Trump calling him and asking him to find ways to overturn the election. And so because they weren't able to do that, and many of them wanted to respond to the frustration that I would suggest they fostered from their Republican constituents, they hosted, after the 2020 election, a series of 15 different hearings about the election and trying to prove the lies that they told. And as a part of those hearings, the Auditor General came. And I asked him what I thought was a very simple question, not a gotcha question, but I will tell you, it was one of those moments where I looked at his tenure and said, you know, we need to run somebody against him. He came to the hearing, and I happened to be the one questioning him. And I said, you know, Mr. Auditor General, you just won an election statewide. Surely you can't believe the election was rigged. Like, you just won statewide on the same ballot with Joe Biden. Like, please tell my colleagues in Pennsylvanians that, like, they should have faith in the election. And he gave one of the worst answers I've ever heard, and one that I call one of the worst because it wasn't laced with incompetence. It was laced with a pure cowardice that has put our democracy at such risk, right? Certainly there are people who showed up to the Capitol and were trying to, you know, murder folks. But we need also be clear that the success that the anti-democracy folks have had is not just because a bunch of people showed up to the Capitol, but it's all the people who've tried to paper over that. All the people who've tried to excuse the language that fomented that. All the people who have tried to embrace some of the rhetoric of that because they believe it's politically helpful to them. And that's what we saw with the Auditor General, who said, Ari, well, my election was fair. Nobody's had any problems with my election. But, you know, I can't, you know, who knows about the other elections? I can't answer that, you know, some version of that. I'm paraphrasing his words. But the reason that matters, and one of the reasons I said, oh, my God, we really have to beat this guy, is Republicans' insistence that the Auditor General be in charge of auditing future statewide elections. They tried to pass it as a constitutional amendment. I know a lot of people focused on the portion of the constitutional amendment that had to do with abortion access. But tucked in that amendment was also language about voter ID, where they wanted to have Pennsylvania the strictest voter ID in the entire country. It was also about putting the Auditor General's office in charge of auditing these elections. And they have also taken this language and tried to amend it into bills that have affected the elections code. We had a bill, one of my bills, that would have moved up Pennsylvania's primary. And in that bill, we had a number of amendments offered, not just for voter ID, but also for the language around the Auditor General being in charge. And so I think it's deeply problematic if we can't have someone who literally won at the same time embrace and defend the security, the safety, and the validity of our elections, and to possibly want to put that person in charge of whether or not people should have faith moving forward. I find that very concerning. The second thing that I'll say, and I know it's a long answer, but the second thing I'll say is
these are super important topics. I mean,
it's like the meat of it all.
Backbone. It's the operating system of our country as we're approaching our 250th birthday, which is having free and fair elections and having voters having confidence in the results of those elections. And you know, credit where credit is due. I've heard many Republicans, including Governor Tom Corbett, say it's mystifying that on the same exact ballot, on the same exact election day, Republicans won two statewide offices, Mr. DeFore and Ms. Garrity, but lost at the top. But how do you accept two of them and not? So anyhow.
Yeah, it's, you know, exactly right. And I, you know, we're not talking about, unfortunately, you know, these aren't Tom Corbett Republicans anymore, unfortunately. We are in a much different place. And I know that for a lot of folks who don't think about politics that often and who have taken that freeze approach that I've taken, right, to the noise and the frustration of politics, when I make the points that I'm making, sometimes people just hear that as, you know, more partisan, you know, language and bomb throwing, but it is real. And if we can have elections that not only that people embrace, but we need to be clear that a part of the reason people don't have faith in our elections is that so-called leaders are telling them that they shouldn't have faith in the election. That's a part of where it comes from. And when you have people who are supposed to know better and who in some instances do know better, foment the lie either implicitly or explicitly, you know, tacitly embrace the lie, it helps to foster people's mistrust. But the other big policy reason that I decided to run was the decision the Auditor General made to stop doing annual compliance audits of our schools. One of the things that he did was to shut down the Bureau of School Audits. And folks might remember that this was around the time that Governor Wolf was pushing for more oversight as it related to cyber charter schools. And just by happenstance, in that same time frame, the Auditor General said, well, you know, I don't have to audit schools, you know, by law. And so he shut down this Bureau of School Audits. It's a huge mistake. You know, I am damn proud to have worked with House Democrats and Governor Shapiro. In the last budget, we passed the largest investment in K-12 education in history, over $1 billion. damn proud of that. But this is not like a pinky promise situation. We have to ensure that those dollars are resulting in our kids getting the type of quality education that they deserve. And those compliance audits not only looked at payments coming from PDE to our districts, but also looked at some other important aspects of our kids' safety and security in schools. It looked at, for example, when Eugene DePasquale was auditor general, he did an audit that folks can go back and look up, where he found there was a school district where bus drivers didn't have licenses. You know, and maybe I'm old fashioned in this way, Ari, but, you know, I kind of like, you know, my loved ones. And if I had kids, I kind of want the person driving them to school to have a license. I don't know. That's just me. But it's these sort of compliance pieces that we're no longer doing. And along the way, he, you know, 11 AFSCME union workers lost their jobs, you know, because of this. And so I think I have seen someone who has not utilized this role in the way that it can be utilized. You know, there's this erroneous view that people have that the auditor is the state's accountant. It's not the state's accountant. The job is not just to say, hey, did somebody miss a zero in some department? No, the audits that are done, compliance, special or performance audits, are to help us quantify the anecdotal struggles that Pennsylvanians are having every single day, right? When people were dealing with the unemployment system at the height of the pandemic and folks had to wait 2 and 3 and 4 months, I'm telling you, that can be a very lonely experience when you're calling, as I had so many people calling my office saying, you know, my rent is due, my landlord is not giving us a break because of the pandemic, I filed for unemployment, I'm not getting it, please, I need help. And our office, you know, did everything we could to help. But when you do an audit of these systems and can highlight the problems on a micro and a macro level, a part of what you can do when you do it right is to help people know they're not alone. This is not in their head. They're not the only people going through this. And we actually have structures that we can fix. So yes, it's about watching the money, making sure the dollars are going where we appropriated the dollars. I'm in my current job as a legislator. But it's also about looking at the performance of these programs. How did those dollars that we appropriated, how are they, what are the outcomes that we're getting from those investments? How can we tailor and be more thoughtful about our investments? And when I say people, you know, to people, when I go around the Commonwealth and, you know, I say, hey, do you know who the Auditor General is? And their eyes glaze over. I have some people say to me, well, Malcolm, that's just because the Auditor General is a boring office. And I say, the Auditor General's office is not boring. We just had some boring Auditor Generals. And I promise I'm going to fix that on January of next year.
Well, someone who was not a boring Auditor General and really pushed the envelope of the office was my old boss. More than 2 decades ago, Auditor General Bob Casey did something unprecedented. That's and true. Audited the state police for compliance with Megan's Law. So that's just yet another example of how...
And audited hospitals as well. That was another...
Absolutely. So you alluded to going around the Commonwealth. You've been super generous with your time. As we wind down, let's get a little granular. You've been endorsed by the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, as well as others. You know, how are you... You obviously have a day job in Harrisburg. It's budget season. But how are you balancing? I mean, I assume you're not doing much sleeping. But you're putting on some road miles. Give folks a little flavor of all that.
You know, I'll always be honest when people ask me that question and say, like, imperfectly, right? That's how you balance it. Super, super imperfectly. You know, I do get my 7 hours. You know, that's consistent. You know, I have also made it my business, Ari, to make sure that I'm going to the gym and taking care of myself. That was something that I did not always prioritize in the way that I am. Now you've heard me talk about this before outside of this this conversation, but I lost both of my parents by the time I was 27. My mom rationed her insulin her entire life. My dad also had type 2 diabetes, had epilepsy, and I watched two people who I loved not always be able to afford the medication they need, but, you know, not always, you know, as they're raising kids and you know, walking on that tightrope that I've talked about, not always prioritizing, you know, taking that half an hour to do what's necessary for yourself. And so I've made that my business to do, you know, no matter how busy I get, I'm going to get those 7 hours and I'm going to get that half an hour in, you know, at the gym. But the other thing that
I should say, it's been a while since we've connected. It definitely looks like you've been in the gym. You were looking great 2 years ago, but you're a different man now. So
we're working on that, Ari. Seriously, it was really important. And you know, like a lot of people, you know, you go to the doctor and they're telling you things that aren't good, and you have to listen to that and say, hey, what am I going to do about it? And along the way, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. And if you're not taking care of yourself, you certainly can't be of use to others. But the other thing that I love to make sure I dispel this myth around people who are leaders in any capacity, that they do it all themselves. You know, there are no superheroes in this work. I don't do it all myself. You know, part of the way I'm able to balance all these things is I have a great staff of people who are just as committed, who are in this work for the same reasons that I'm in this work, and who have said for different reasons, hey, I don't want to run for office, but I want to serve, and who are serving. And what that has meant for us is, you know, I've passed a number of bills out of the House on this session on non-discrimination, on cybersecurity, on the, you know, bill called the Clawback Act to make sure that we're recouping state dollars that are either overpaid or people don't use the dollars, you know, appropriately. And we have some other important legislation that we're going to be working on this year, looking at the benefits cliff and what that means for families, looking at jury duty and how we increase the pay. Pennsylvania is one of the lowest in terms of how much we compensate jurors. And so that means people aren't getting a jury of their peers. But it also means, you know, campaigning for myself, but also for President Biden, the only state rep in the country who the president picked to be on his national advisory board for his reelection. And so I've been in South Carolina and Wisconsin and certainly doing a lot here in the Keystone State.
Yeah, without a doubt. So last question, you know, I've heard you and many say, and I ascribe to it, that every month is Black History Month, but we're recording the month after Black History Month. But my understanding is you were down at the White House with leaders from across the country. So last question, give listeners a little flavor what that was all about. And then a corollary to that, so it wasn't really the last question, is, you know, you hear a lot of national talking heads talking about Philadelphia turnout and enthusiasm in the Black community, and especially amongst Black males, and intrigue with Republican candidates from the Black community. So we all heard President Trump's remarks in front of that Black audience in South Carolina. So let's end on two different notes that take it maybe to a little more national.
Yeah, well, Ari, I share your view. You know, Black history is American history, and American history is made every single day. And it was so special to be at the White House with so many leaders who are firsts. You know, our lieutenant governor was there, and obviously our incredible vice president, and you know, state, county, municipal leaders from all across the country. And so it was so great to be there and to be inspired by people who were doing the work that I think we're all called to do. And again, not all of us as elected officials, but we all have a responsibility to make sure that this experiment, democracy, doesn't die on our watch, that we're not the generation that has to say to the next generation, sorry, the promise of America stopped here. That cannot happen. And I think as the election moves forward, I think that choice is coming into more stark relief. You know, I don't spend all day looking at the polls, and I don't just say that as a thing. I just think it's not a good use of my time. But I will tell you that there were a number of folks who, you know, didn't believe, for whatever reason, we saw this pretty overwhelmingly in a lot of different surveys, that Donald Trump and Joe Biden would be the nominees of the respective parties. A lot of people just didn't believe that for whatever reason. I don't know why, but they didn't. That is clear now. Should be clear. Both of those folks, a couple of days before we were recording, clinched their nominations. They will be the nominees. And, you know, if you remember, and I'm sure you do, 4 years ago today, many folks were locking down their homes, you know, storing up on food and water and toilet paper and other supplies because this COVID pandemic, which former President Trump told us was just going to go away, did not go away and, you know, ballooned into a full blown, you know, pandemic that took the lives of millions of people and changed our economy and our world forever. And I do think that voters of color and voters of conscience are going to look at the choice that we have ahead of us of somebody who is focused on delivering for people versus somebody who spent his entire career going back to when he was a real estate developer, discriminating against Black folks in housing, calling on the Central Park Five or the Exonerated Five, as they're now called, calling on them to receive the death penalty, even though, you know, all these years later, we know that they did not do it. And one of those members of the Central Park Five, you know, you might know, Ari, is on New York City Council now. This is a guy who does not show respect for really anybody, and certainly not to the Black community. And so my hope is that, you know, in this election, we see turnout, you know, in the high 60s, you know, as we have, I think, President Obama in 2008, I believe it was 68% turnout in Philly. Biden in 2022, I think 66% turnout, if I'm remembering those numbers correctly. And I think we need to be back in that range, in that 67, 68, 69% range. And I think that it's possible. I really do feel, and I get it, everybody doesn't get to know, you know, the president or the governors or whoever in ways that I've been really lucky, humbled, and blessed to. But Joe Biden is a good man. He is a good person who I know is in this for the right reason and who, against all the odds, has delivered so many good things to people all across this country and here in Pennsylvania. You know, the Black wealth gap is the smallest it's ever been. Black unemployment, some of the lowest rates it's ever been. Inflation down from 9% down to, you know, almost at 2%, I think at 3 point something. Almost in the 2% range. And we are making the types of investments and getting rid of lead pipes, investing in our schools, all these different things, lowering drug prices. And the final thing I'll say on this is, you know, the president talks a lot about the cancer moonshot, ending cancer in our lifetime. And obviously cancer can touch any and everybody. But whether it's diabetes or cancer or hypertension, Black Americans have higher rates of those than anybody else. And so when we lower costs, when we cure diseases, when we take ourselves back to our roots here in Philadelphia that we know all too well, where we are the birthplace of big ideas, when we do that, we can show people that government can work. It can work for working people. It can work for working families. But a part of how it works is working people and working families getting involved, not waiting on somebody to come save us, but recognizing that we can run, we can hold these positions, and that when given a choice, we should back the people who actually give a damn about us. In this race, I think there's only one person who gives a damn about us. His name is Joe Biden. And so I look forward to supporting him and really appreciative of this opportunity to talk to you and to all of your listeners who probably are listening to this, Ari, on the treadmill or on a drive somewhere. So thanks for being letting me be part of the commute.
There's members of Congress who shall remain nameless who this keeps them company on their Amtrak schlep or their schlep on I-70. So anyhow, thank you so much as you're schlepping around the Commonwealth for being in the arena and for giving your time and perspective. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Ari. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Pennsylvania Kitchen Table Politics. Take a minute and leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform. Please also consider following us on social media for updates and announcements regarding future episodes and new guests. You're political, so I am sure that you're on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. We are too, at PA Political Podcast. Visit our website, papoliticalpodcast.org, and send us your feedback about this episode and suggestions on future guests. Until next week.